To another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd. Joining me today is Wario Will.
Welcome to the Garden of Insanity, everyone. I hope you're enjoying a copy of No More Heroes 3 out there today. It's finally here. I cannot wait. It's such a shame I've got to pick up my copy until Saturday. Dang it. I want to play.
Well, we've all been there, Will. We've all been there. Also here, of course, is Talia Styler.
I need somebody to do a study on when Todd started singing the welcome in his introduction. I don't know when it started. It's been at least 4 weeks, so you can rule out that it was. I need to know when this happened.
Well, if we want to do, like, I think the official first one, I think that was when I sang it to Epona's theme, like way, way back. Remember that? Like, hello, welcome to the Nintendo Entertainment. Remember that? Like, that was like,
that was like a long time.
Yeah, I know. It's like, if you want that, like, the actual origin, I'm pretty sure that's it. But I obviously don't always sing. It just happens, I guess. I don't know. But I have the talent, so that's why I'm the host.
You went down an octave on the opponent's theme, notably.
I did. I don't know why. It happened. It's just how my voice goes. I could sing really high or really low depending on the song. I don't understand it. But we're not here to talk about my singing yet. We are here to talk about everything that's been going on. It's been a very interesting week. We have an actually truly unique main event to get to tonight. But first, what have you been playing? I also want to point out that this is the first time in 2 weeks we actually started with this. It's a nice change of pace. All right, so I want to start with Tyler tonight because for the next 2 weeks, he's not going to be Tellius Tyler. He's going to be Traveling Tyler. Yeah.
Hey, so, nice.
Thank you. I tried. And 60. So, Tyler, what have you been playing?
Yeah, so the traveling is coming up, and I have been racking my brain to figure out which games I'm going to play overseas. I'm headed to Italy for my brother's wedding. I'll be gone for 2 weeks. And oddly enough, the game I've come back to is actually Pokemon Sword. I restarted my file on that one. I'm looking to probably attempt to fill out the Pokédex while I'm overseas. One of my buddies, friend of the show, Captain Toad Taylor, has Shield, so I'll probably be trading with him to get the other version-exclusive Mon. But Pokemon Sword is definitely... I reviewed the game, and I believe I gave it a 3... And I stand by that. There's times I really enjoy it. And I've actually started writing like this long article just about the Pokemon series in general. Who knows if it will ever see the light of day. But the idea of being like, we focus so much on graphics when we're talking about what's wrong with Pokemon currently. And I think that the graphical issues are like the fourth most major problem that the franchise needs to address. The biggest one, there's so much design that hasn't changed since 1996 when the series began that really should have evolved by now along with the gaming industry. Like back in the day, grinding for hours was just like par for the course in an RPG. That's what you did. And in today's games, I think developers have realized that streamlining the experience makes just for a better overall game, and it does remove padding, but who cares if your game is 40 hours or 20 hours, whichever makes it better is the version you should go with. What really made me think about that is just trying to catch wild Pokemon and how torturous it can sometimes be. I know in the Let's Go games, which I kind of want to play now because I would love to see how their catch mechanics work, the Pokemon in the current games, it doesn't matter. Like, you can have them down to red health and paralyzed. I threw 20 Pokeballs at a level 15 Oddish, and I couldn't catch it. It just would not
work. Really?
No, that actually happened. Yes.
I was saying, like, what?
Yeah. So it was really annoying. And it's a level 15 Oddish. It's not a rare Pokemon. And there's nothing I could do besides wait until Great Balls come into the store. It's not fun to stay. Like, there's nothing. Like, if there was something I could do to improve my chances, I would think, okay, this is a big deal. But this happens for Pokemon after Pokemon after Pokemon. And when it's a major hook of the game is catching them all and completing the Pokedex, like the professor literally tasks you with filling out your Pokedex, it shouldn't be such a painful experience at times. Like, it just, One time I was fighting, I forget what enemy it was, but I hit him with confusion to lower their health, and they were already paralyzed, and of course they end up getting the confused status effect, and after like 10 minutes of trying to catch and failing, they killed themselves in the confusion. I had to find another one and start the process all over again. It was funny, but just totally torture. And there's a lot of like little things in Pokemon Sword, and really in every previous Pokemon game, that is like that, where it just wastes the player's time and it stalls the momentum. The graphics aren't great, and on the in docked mode, I played it originally almost entirely in handheld. There's real performance issues in docked mode. Frame drops are constant. But those, like, I can get by the visuals. What I can't get by is those, like, unacceptable design flaws that haven't been ironed out for 20 years. And I know some people will be yelling, tradition, but I don't think that the sacred cow of Pokemon is having to stand there and try to catch these wild mon for 30 minutes and hope it, just praying that it works out. I feel like there's got to be an elegant solution out there. I know Let's Go, like I said, changed the capture mechanics. I don't know if they're significantly better or too simple. But there's just got to be a happy medium. And I'm sure that Diamond and Pearl will have the same problems, again, being a remake. At some point, this is going to catch up to the Pokemon Company, I would think. That's not the only issue. I think there's major pacing problems, for example. If you just go through the game without swapping out your team, you will be way over-leveled by the time you eat. Like, your starter Pokemon will be at level 20 by the time you finish the wild area. And the enemies you're fighting are like level 9. So there's a ton of problems in these games that I think are really important that need to be ironed out. And if they don't, eventually the critics and fans are the unthinkable will happen, and a Pokemon game will get bad reviews and sales will suffer. It seems crazy, but eventually that will happen.
Yeah. Yeah, there are definitely some things that I think that they could totally improve for the next one whenever that comes around. I do remember actually I was playing Ace Attorney and I saw you playing Pokemon Sword. I'm like, wait, what? Why is Tyler back on that? Like, okay, whatever works for you, man. All right.
Yeah, it's a good game to travel to. Like, there's so much you can do on it. And yeah, there's a ridiculous amount of content that I didn't get to the first time I went through. So I don't know. I was complaining, but there is a lot of stuff that I enjoy about the game. That being said, I think I'm going to have to pick up Axiom Verge 1 and 2 and get some new games under my belt while I'm away.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, Will?
For me, has been more or less been generally a light week as well. For me, like, I've been more or less been going back on some old backlog games to basically wait until No More Heroes 3, which is out today. So basically, as usual, I've been more or less been playing a bit of more Fall Guys before the podcast. And again, funny enough, this at Gamescom, they actually announced that the current season, mid-season update, which they actually have the Jungle Book collaboration with Disney. Which, yeah, I'm not kidding. They had, like, a Mowgli, it's been such a long time since I read the Jungle Book. But, yeah, they actually had a Jungle Book collaboration will be coming down later down the line. So, yeah, that's a little nice surprise for any Fall Guys fans out there. Also, I actually have actually gone back, is playing Persona 5 Strikers, and right now, heading in Okinawa right now, and... Ah, man, it's just like, it feels so good just to go back to a series that you're so familiar with and just seeing all these characters again. So, yeah, just going work on my backlog and with Persona 5 Strikers. And, of course, naturally, by the time, like, this recording comes out, I won't be getting my copy until Saturday. But, yeah, No More Heroes 3, it's finally out. And just, like, I've been more or less been seeing previews with Suda51 on his Twitter, on YouTube. It's just like... yeah, that's the Suda51 I know and love. So, for me, I'm just frothing in the mouth right now. Just like, I want to play this game so bad. Curse you, media influencers, getting the game so early. But I digress. So
I want to note for the record that when people say I'm frothing at the mouth, they're not really frothing at the mouth. But with Will, I believe he would froth. You are just that kind of guy.
So yeah, just to seeing Matt McMuscle, seeing even like that little small highlight, six things you should know about Suda 51 is like, okay, I want this game, please, just give me this game now, inject it into my veins. But you'll definitely be hearing my impressions on next week's podcast. So yeah, look forward to that. So yeah, can't wait. I want to get, just let me play as Travis right now, please.
All right, for me, I have been playing, but I want to talk about my Comic-Con experience because,
oh yeah.
yes, I went to a Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City, Missouri, and there were, thankfully, some Nintendo cosplays there, though not the ones I was expecting. All right, like over the last couple of years, obviously 2020 not included, I've seen a lot of Fire Emblem cosplays and certain
Okay,
others
okay,
like
okay,
Little Mac or whatever, but with this one, it was primarily Mario themed. All right, like I saw a bunch of Mario and Luigi. I saw a bunch of Warios,
okay.
okay, which is very prevalent for our main event, as a certain someone knows. I saw one Wild Luigi. I saw a couple of Princess Peaches. I saw a Bowsette.
Okay.
That was a first. But my personal favorite was a group of five girls dressed up as Toads, and everyone was a different color.
Okay.
The five different, and they were like, they walked in a line, like perfectly in sync, and they went around the con. I'm just like, yeah, that is how Toads would walk, wouldn't it? So that was
Were they
something.
just standard Toads, or were they like the traveling sisters from Paper Mario? Did they have like
Oh.
No, they
like
were
curly hair,
standard
like
Toads.
loops?
Standard Toads.
Okay,
And they had
that's
like,
still
like
cool.
the big Toad heads and everything. So like no Toadettes, but it was just like, I didn't expect, like, I've seen Toads, I think, but like they were all color coordinated and everything. It was like, wow, that was a lot of effort for that group. So props to them. Gaming wise, I've obviously been playing Fire Emblem Heroes, but the big one for me is, of course, Greatest Attorney Chronicles. I have now started playing the second game. I'm in the second chapter, and the flaws are starting to show. All right, like I could tell when playing the first game that they clearly had some long-term storytelling plans going on, but they kind of just retconned its own history, and I'm not sure why. They have a case, the second case ties back to the first game with a character that you meet and solve this person's case, and then apparently the very next day in the second game, they get arrested again for murder, or sorry, attempted murder, my bad. And I have to save them again. I'm just like, you didn't mention this before. And then the reason we didn't hear about it is because Herlock Sholmes swore them all to silence. And I'm like, okay, but that doesn't work with what was said. And then there's some dialogue that like directly contradicts what happened in the previous game. I don't get it. So I'm hoping that the next three chapters pick things up because I'm already over this chapter. I want it to be done. And, it's just very curious. And then my biggest complaint with the game, by far, outside of Sherlock Holmes, as I talked about last week, Herlock Sholmes or whatever his name is,
It's important to note that his name is Herlock
Herlock
Sholmes.
Sholmes. I know. But it's the jury system. So in this game, because of its time setting, you're in Britain during a period where they use a jury system, and here's how it works. There are six people on the jury. It's supposed to be a random jury, and at any point during the trial, they can declare their stance of guilty or not guilty. And then, if they give you an all guilty verdict, you then have the ability to do what's called a summation examination, where you question them about why they picked that verdict, in this case, guilty, and you can try and change their minds. In theory, yes, that's different. But in practice, it's so annoying because at times you can go two, three times through a trial getting all the guilty verdicts, then having to do the summation examination just to get back to doing the bloody cross-examinations that you're used to in this game. And then the biggest thing that really ticks me off is that, and this is because I'm a writer, is that, as I said, the jury is supposed to be 100% random. And yet in both the first game and the second game that I've only done one case in, but they're not random. Like, they are emphatically, like, they are like the worst jury selection ever. There are multiple cases where jurors from past cases show back up in both the first game and the second game. There was a character who was a witness in one case, you actually accuse them of murder based on the evidence you have, and then all of a sudden they're the foreman of the jury. And the judge literally says, oh, it is your job to have an unbiased opinion, and the foreman is a guy that hates you. That's not unbiased. And then there's multiple people who are on there and literally say, I don't care about this case. I just want to go home. That's hardly unbiased. There's one guy who can't hear very well, so that doesn't help. In the very first case of the first game, the second case of the first game, there's a guy who literally says, I hate the rich. And the defendant you're trying to protect is a rich guy. So, of course, he has bias. I'm like, I was waiting for a twist to happen. Like someone like Herlock or whatever rigged the jury in their own way to help you out. I was waiting for that twist, and it has not come yet. It could still come based on certain things, but like this is just, it's kind of lazy. Honestly, it really is. And I don't like the system. And I actually heard about this system before the game was even announced for its localization, because a lot of people don't like the system apparently. And I agree with them. It just disrupts the gameplay from what it needs to be. And then when you pair this with all the jurors that are either totally biased, don't deserve to be there, have no reason to be there, or just there for plot device, or like to help get you certain information, which shouldn't happen if it's a random selection, it just takes away from the game. Because the cases are fine on their own, but...
I will say, like, the jury guy who just wants to go home, I feel like that probably happens in real life all the time, but certainly not having, like, the foreman of, you know, whatever established, like, you can't have somebody personally connected to the case that...
Exactly!
That would, even, what era does this take place? Is it, like, the 1800s or
1900s? Yeah,
1800s. Okay, yeah, I mean, you know, so. The justice system then was... still better than that, you know.
Yeah, and the dumb thing is, like, they kind of went meta on it, because in the final case of the first game, they you have a jury that's literally all people you know about, including one juror who's now the foreman, who was the husband of the person who accidentally stabbed somebody in the previous case. And like, how are you the foreman? You're biased. You know what this lawyer does. You know how things are going to go, and yet you're somehow the foreman, even though you were connected to the attacker, accidental as she may have been, of the previous case. How does that work? And both, I almost said Apollo,
Naruhodo.
Naruhodo and his companion at the time, Iris, are like, yeah, it's supposed to be a random selection, but this is an odd one even for me. And I'm like, well, no kidding! Like, ugh. So... I'm still enjoying the game, but it's just like when I get to those parts of the jury and I'm just like, oh, here we go. It's time for the examination. And it's just like, sometimes I'll even use the guide just to speed through the sections just because I want to get out and I want to get back to just regular good old sleuthing, which I love to do. So again, I've still got three cases to go in the second game, so we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it does weigh on you when you know this is going to happen. Then you add that to the deduction thing that I talked about last weekend. It can just totally kill the momentum of the game, and I absolutely hate that. Because it's good otherwise. The animations are still some of the best I've seen for a title like this. So there's a lot to like, but there are some things that I absolutely have to, you know, knock down. So sadly, Tyler, when I review this game, it will not be getting a 4.5. I know, it's hard to believe, but it won't.
Sounds like a solid 4.25, though.
Maybe. Maybe a 4.33? Anyway. So, but yeah, I've been focusing on that because of I've been gone the last few days. But, yeah, it's still fun. It's actually, the sad thing for me is that after I get done with Greatest Attorney Chronicles, I'm going to have nothing to play until Dread comes out.
You're going to have WarioWare Get It Together
nope.
to play.
Nope, I will not.
Yes.
No. Nope. But what I will have for right now is the news, because there honestly has been a decent amount of news. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. And how convenient, we're going to start off with the WarioWare trailer. Did you get to watch this, Tyler, or are you still going to do your whole embargo against anything?
Yeah, I did the embargo. No, I did see a little bit of Wario gameplay, but I have embargoed it as best as I could. I don't think I've seen this exact trailer.
But basically, apparently it gave a little bit more of the story. Apparently now you're actually going to be sucked into the games versus just playing them. So that explains why you're actually playing as the multiple characters and not just Wario this time around, or as an ambiguous finger or whatever. So that's a nice change of pace, I suppose. And it would explain the whole get it together, because you got to get it together if you're going to escape, I suppose. So, okay. And then that comes out on the 10th, correct, Tyler?
Yes, that comes out September 10.
So stay tuned for that. We're like only 2 weeks away, and I know Tyler is very excited.
I am. The demo received mostly positive reception. Some people didn't like the character mechanic. Others really didn't. I know John Coms of Nintendo Life, John Cartwright, liked it quite a bit. So I usually agree with him. Very, very excited as we approach September 10. It's just been too long since we've had a, I guess, I know, there's been a couple of WarioWare games. Like Gold was a collection, and Game and Wario was like not really a WarioWare game. Smooth Moves is the last like real, and I think they did Wario DIY on like you could create your own games. Totally different. Smooth Moves was the last like true WarioWare game in my opinion, and it was amazing. So excited for this one to come out. As we get closer, my hype is just ramping up.
You can't contain the hype. The hype.
I really can't. I love WarioWare. These games are so goofy, and just every again, I have abstained as best as possible, but just the concept of having the games change depending on which character you get, awesome. And the multiplayer element looks great. I cannot believe that they didn't have one on the Wii U, which was just a console that was perfect for it. Game and Wario I know existed, but it was outside of 9-volt, not traditional WarioWare. It baffling, baffling decision, but they're about to redeem it.
There you go. All right, so next up, a game I am hyped for, Metroid Dread. Now there was a new trailer that came out, actually while I was gone at the Comic-Con, but one of our other teammates got it. It showcases a little bit more of the story of the game. In this case, the X virus, which was a key part of Metroid Fusion, was found on the planet, and the Emmy robots, which are your nemesises, nemesi, whatever, of the game, were actually dispatched to go and research it. But something went wrong, because of course something went wrong. It's a Metroid game, so Samus is dispatched, and as we see in the trailer, something goes wrong as she descends to the planet because she winds up unconscious on the surface of the planet and staring at a Chozo temple. Ooh, spooky. So, I like how they're doing this very minimalist approach to the story and how things are going, because they're clearly wanting this to be a super major title and they want to get people as hyped as possible without spoiling too much. So, and I'm excited. I mean, I like the gameplay style. Again, I liked Metroid Samus Returns, and Mercury Steam did a good job on that, and they're the ones making Dread, and this is again a game 15 years in the making, so the potential is absolutely all there, and I hope they nail it, because I think this if they pull this off right, I think this could be game of the year material. So.
There's a smoothness to the trailers of watching Metroid Dread. Like the way Samus moves just looks so nice. It looks like it's going to be a game that's great to handle, and I think that that's so critical towards making a 2D Metroid a success. I have nothing but confidence in this one.
Yeah, I agree as well. I agree as well. Just like seeing, like, also, like, I believe it's so, like, having that moment when Samus just has, like, suddenly has that white out eyes to that point, like, having that, like, a memory flashback is like, okay, this is getting real, real spooky. But again, Metro Games has that underlying tone of it. So just, like, even seeing it and combat the motion of it all right now is like, okay, it's a solid Metroid game. So yeah, I'm happy for fans out there.
There you go. All right, next up we have a game we actually haven't talked about in a while. Hyrule Warriors. Yeah. The team behind Age of Calamity decided to open up about some of their decisions behind not just the world and the gameplay, but the characters. So for example, when doing, because this was technically a prequel kind of sort of Breath of the Wild, so their first thing, according to their producers and the director, was, quote, "The first thing we had to do was adjust the environment to be suitable for combat. We had to simultaneously make the world appear as if it were 100 years prior, and all the while making it an appropriate battlefield. 100 years and battlefield were our key words. We had to imagine things like the enemy bases and destroyed city walls from the ruins in Breath of the Wild. We were designing a battlefield in a way that blends our keywords with hints, such as the enemy forts that stood 100 years prior." And then for the characters, they were they wanted to subvert expectations in big ways. Quote, "We were conscious of two things. First was to meet player expectations, and the second was to betray and exceed those expectations. Being able to unlock and use a character is a great reward, especially in the Musou games. We wanted to surprise players and keep the next battle exciting." And I think they definitely did that, because they had a really diverse set of characters. From, of course, Link, Zelda, to Impa, to Koga, and the scientists. You know, there was a lot of cool characters that you could play as.
Yeah, like, even with the expanded DLC right now, even play as the Guardian, which is like, okay, that's something. And of course, naturally, with Zelda riding on the bike.
Yep,
like...
Zelda's on the bike.
I mean, sure, that is definitely the unusual thing, but why not? Why not?
Yeah. Again, like, there was a reason I really liked Age of Calamity, because it could have been just another Musou game, and the original Hyrule Warriors was fine with its own unique story, but there were some things that definitely held it back.
Mm-mm-mm.
Whereas this one, they're like, okay, we're going to go balls to the wall here, you know, let's make it as close to Breath of the Wild, but making it our own unique story, and then the whole, like, the timeline shift and everything that no one saw coming, you know.
Okay, wait. We definitely saw that coming. We talked about that leading up to the game's release, that it seemed as though they may go in a different direction, which honestly is the reason I haven't bought this game yet. Like, I just have no interest in its story, and yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't. I feel like with the character selection, they did a strong job, but I don't know. I feel like this game was a bit of a letdown in terms of concept.
I think I honestly don't feel you can say that unless you play it, because you're right, and I was speaking on something else that happened in the game, not the, like, diverging from the ending. That's how you read it.
Okay.
I was speaking of something else, but yes, we all were nervous about this game because we all thought it's got to either end in Breath of the Wild or in the lead up to Breath of the Wild, or they're changing the ending. And while I know you know how it ends, you really do need to play it,
because
it's
something you have to experience. I would not like it as much if they didn't pull it off the way they did.
Musou games are fine. They're fine, but they're not something. This game's $60. I played Fire Emblem Warriors a lot, and it was fine. I love Fire Emblem more than I love Zelda. I don't know. If they had a story that was like this dark tragedy, I would have been into it, because Zelda doesn't really do that often, but they didn't, and that bummed me out to the point where I don't know, maybe one day if it's on sale, I'll pick it up, but I don't know. It certainly disappointed me in that ending.
Hmm.
I understand. No, I don't understand. Nah, it's, if you get to play it, do it. If you can't, if you don't, then that's fine. All right, next up. Okay, this one is just weird. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh no.
Monster Hunter Rise has gotten new DLC.
Yep.
And you're gonna be Akuma.
Yep.
How does that work?
So I'll just give some background. Is basically like, this is basically the next stop in Capcom's collaboration with their own IP. So previously we had like Okami with with layered armor, you could dress up your Palamute as Okami. So simple as that. Plus, we also had the earlier DLCs with Monster Hunter Stories, Rings of Ruin, as well as other IPs, last I checked, from Capcom's licenses. So yeah, this time around, which honestly is not too surprising as if you know their history from Monster Hunter World. So they have done these things like with Ryu and Sakura, last I checked, for Monster Hunter World. But so this time it's gonna be with Akuma, which okay. I mean, granted, it kind of works with the whole rage thing, especially if you know about Akuma being the raging demon as he is, the demon of the Satsui no Haro is like, and plus the gestures of it all. I thought it was actually gonna be like, we actually can pull up those gestures, but I think it's maybe just editing magic, which you actually can which is based on the Sword and Shield moveset, last I checked. So it's kind of a little bit sad, but it seems that you can also do, like, the obviously the signature moves, like the Tatsumaki Senpyokaku, the Hadoukens, the Air Hadoukens. It seems that there is at least some gestures you can actually unlock in the quest, which I believe at the time of recording right now, it is currently out available, if I recall correctly. So, I mean, heck, why not? It's something. I'd be surprised if they wouldn't bring Dante into Monster Hunter as they did with Monster Hunter World. So, I mean, again, it's Capcom. They can do whatever they want. Why not?
I know, but it's just like with Okami, you could say, okay, that makes sense because it's a beast. You know, that's fine. Akuma's a Street Fighter. All right? And doesn't this mean that if he uses the Raging Demon that he's not just destroying the bodies, he's destroying their souls? But do monsters have souls? I need to know.
Monster World is a very complicated world, so I'm not too renowned in it, but some would argue probably that. But again, we had crazier things. Again, we had Final Fantasy collaborations as well.
That's true.
Do not forget about that. We had Nintendo
collaborations.
Nintendo collaborations, but again, Monster World, they had legit Final Fantasy collaboration. They had a Dragoon armor, last I recall correctly, as well. They had a Behemoth. Yeah, they actually had the Behemoth in Monster World. So, you never know. Monster World, the Capcom has gone around with many different licenses. So, you never know. You never know.
And for anyone out there who can answer if Monster Hunter monsters have souls, please let me know. @Guardians_comic on Twitter. Oh, I forgot to mention one thing during What Have You Been Playing? One of our viewers, who is apparently British or lived in Britain at one time, commented on our last week's podcast episode, noting that my criticisms about the grammar and certain sayings was incorrect, because in British writing, you don't put the period after Mr. and Mrs., and phrases like come along in are indeed things they say in Britain. Who knew?
Wow.
I know!
Wow. The more you know!
The more you know. So I apologize for my statements, because I thought they were on some localization errors, which I knew they had worked really hard on. And I thank you for culturing us here on NEP. I am a benevolent host, and I am willing to admit when I am wrong, and I was wrong on this case. So I will be more mindful when I write my review, so that I don't repeat this mistake. So thank you.
It's like no, this is American English. This is British English.
It's British. Well, I mean, some of it was obvious. Like, for example, they use S instead of Z. So apologize is I-S-E, not I-Z-E. That I could tell. Oh, they're just speaking like a Brit. But with like the dots and, you know, some of the sayings, which some of them I still don't get. But like, if that's just how they talk in the UK, then I'm fine with that. Okay, I didn't know, so there you go. All right, next up we have a Pokemon TV.
Yep.
Yes, it is officially on Nintendo Switch. Take it away, Will.
So yes, earlier today we actually had an announcement that the Pokemon Twitter account actually releasing the app of Pokemon TV on Nintendo Switch. So for those who don't know, basically it's a very simple video app, like very akin to maybe Netflix or even YouTube. But basically it has everything Pokemon in on your Switch. So be it from your the Pokemon Trading Card Game Championships, or the shorts like the Twilight Wings, or even full-on seasons of Pokemon. And we're talking a lot of seasons, even the first two seasons, including up to season 23. Like, I'm kind of sad they don't have the Johto, or even the season 5 or so, which is kind of sad, honestly. But you take what you can get. You can take what you can get. And I gotta say, I saw a little bit of with the first episode. It retains all its nostalgic quality. I still remember that whole 90s aesthetic back in the season 1. And yeah, if you want to go basically Pokemon binge on the go, yes, this is probably the best way to watch Pokemon in a Nintendo Switch, aside from like watching it on YouTube on your phone. So overall, it's a good thing to have if you're a Pokemon fan.
There you go. Like, I honestly, I knew about Pokemon TV, but I've never partook in it because I just never had the need. But it is good that it's on the Switch. I know there will be a lot of Pokemon fans who will indulge in this, so good for them. All right, now for some sad news. TMNT, Shredder's Revenge, has been delayed to 2022. Sad face. And April O'Neil is going to be a character you can play as. Okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know April is a very capable woman, especially in the 2012 series where she became a Kunoichi under Splinter's epic training. But this is like old school April, and she's attacking people with a camera, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, here we go. April unleashes flurries of hits against the Foot Clan's devious soldiers. Her agility and far-reaching slide kicks help her close in on targets quickly, and she once again proves the Turtles can rely on her unwavering support even through slices of pizza. Okay.
Like, yeah, when I saw this footage at Gamescom, and it was definitely quite a surprise. Like, I thought like it would be Splinter, but sure, April O'Neil is definitely a character. Even back in the 90s, aesthetic is like she can hold herself down. So yeah, the defense, just the attack, just how she plays as well is like very. They emphasize that each character is plays very differently. So just seeing her in action is like, yeah, it's good. Like even has that like almost that, I guess in a way, a Streets of Rage as well. In a sense, it gives me that sense of style. But overall, how she is presented here is quite her.
Yeah, I think this is a game I'm really looking forward to as somebody who loved Streets of Rage 4. But when it didn't show up in the most recent indie world, I think we kind of had an idea that it was to be delayed. I sort of expected to see it there. I thought maybe they would do like a Game Awards shadow drop. I don't know. It's probably too big of a game to just shadow drop. But I'm not shocked that it's delayed, although having April is pretty sweet. This is going to be a great game if you haven't played a beat 'em up in a long time and enjoyed that genre, or you've enjoyed Turtles in Time, I think you've got to have this game on your radar.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Turtles in Time. Yep.
Yeah. I have no problem with April being a playable character. I don't, but I find it curious that, like Will said, it wasn't Splinter or Casey Jones. Like, hello, Goongala. It's right there. All right.
I think they're going to do that eventually. I think.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So we'll see, I suppose. But I know a lot of people will be sad that you know, it's delayed to 2022, because that's the last thing we needed right now is yet another delay.
It seems to me like, yeah, we just got through a worldwide pandemic. Okay, let's just wait. Let's set it.
Hold on. We're not through it.
We're not through it. Yes, we're not, okay. Quote-unquote, through it. And, like, okay, we'll set a release date to 2020. No, it's still happening. So, okay, we'll move into 2022. It's like, video game companies. Like, granted, I know you want to make people happy, but also just remember about the world situation.
Yeah. All right, next up, this one is just too weird. All right, it's about Animal Crossing.
Yep.
They're doing a crossover with Puma?
Puma.
Question. This is I think, I don't know if it's the second or third, but
the
they
second one, the first one was Mario. The first
they
one
definitely
was Mario.
Did Mario is what I was gonna
yeah,
say.
I remember Mario.
Those shoes were awesome. All three of them, the regular ones, the sunshine ones, and the galaxy ones.
Galaxy ones. Yeah, I was sad like that thing sold out real quick. Yes.
It is a good thing that I am broke, because I would waste so much money buying these stupid limited time Puma cross Nintendo shoes.
The Animal Crossing by then, they were sold out.
Yeah. So I'm sure they like shoe heads, you know, they probably sold them out quick, but the Animal Crossing ones don't look quite as like stylish. I don't know. I don't know. It's a stretch to call the Mario ones super stylish. Maybe the Galaxy ones you could wear.
I mean, Mario. It's Mario. Of course, those things were awesome.
Yeah, I don't know.
Stylish, they were.
I don't know. I don't know if you could wear it. Like, they're cool, and I would wear them because I have no shame. But
I have Megazord shoes.
I have like Sonic the Hedgehog socks that I wear all the time, and like sorts
who's,
of nerd
who's
stuff.
Shocked
I
about
have
that?
No shame.
Who's shocked about that? That he has Sonic socks. All right, come on.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if any of them, besides maybe the Galaxy ones, would like look good with any outfit though. Maybe a fashion person can make it work. The Animal Crossing ones are like light blue. I mean, you can look them up yourself, but they're
yeah.
Blue,
I'm actually looking at the design right now. It has that brown white aesthetic, but it's very similar to New Horizons, which again I can see it's nice to look at, but again it's white. It's easy, can be easily dirty unless you want to present them. And it will also come up with like a small little star pouch, which is kind of a nice little touch. So, I mean, it's definitely an earthly feel. It's like very New Horizons, if anything else.
Okay, yeah. So I want to admit something. When I heard about this, I wasn't thinking they were making Animal Crossing shoes. I thought that it was going to be a Puma-themed DLC content.
That would be something.
That's why I said it was a weird story. Because, like, wait, they're putting Puma content in the game? I'm like, sure, I guess, but this makes so much more sense. I forgot about the Mario shoes. I had, because I was like, what, 2-3 months ago? I've tried to sleep since then. All right? So, yeah, but no, this makes much more sense that it's Animal Crossing themed shoes. Like, and yeah, these are a little bit basic, though. I know what they're going for with the, like, the colors and the, like, the topography scheme. You know, it feels like an Animal Crossing thing. But yeah, the Mario shoes are better. So I feel better now because I'm like, why are they doing, like, why would you put Puma themed DLC in the game? We don't care about the shoes. Okay, but these shoes we can care about. Okay, I feel better now. So see, this is why, yeah. I was wrong. I'm it's rare that I'm
in
wrong
your defense
twice.
The initial tweet was ambiguous from Nintendo. It was just like,
yeah,
Puma Cross Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Have they updated Animal Crossing recently, by the way? I mean, this just feels like a running story is that they've just abandoned Animal Crossing. If their first, like, update in a long time was Puma Shoes, I think that the world would have melted.
I mean, I haven't heard anything aside from, obviously, we went through a year of Animal Crossing already, so I think they're just going with the season changes and all that. So no, they have not announced any like major quality of life changes, last I recall. So
not a big one anyway. At least not that I that I can remember. What was the Mario DLC? Wasn't that like earlier this year? Was that late last year?
I think
Animal
that
Crossing?
Was earlier this
yeah.
year. I think.
Yeah, that ended when Mario died at the end of March.
March. Yeah.
Mario died. So much to the joy of Bowser. Okay, moving on. Okay, this next one, I guarantee you, is a weird story, because if you recall the fitness boxing games, the ones that, you know, not unlike, you know, Wii Fit,
or Ring Fit.
You know, the ones that actually, like, are trying to get you active and everything. Okay, they've had two games in that franchise. They've both done well, and they're fine games. They're getting an anime. Really?
I did not see this coming. Yeah.
Okay, so it's apparently it's coming soon to Japan. Coming this October, in fact. And it's going to be a comedy series, I kid you not, venturing into the mundane daily activities of the trainers that helped put the game on the map when it was first released. Uh-huh?
yeah. Like, this was definitely, like, a weird choice. I mean, especially coming from, like, a Nintendo game, if anything else. I mean, yeah, Animal Crossing we had it with show and everything, other different licenses as well. But for fitness boxing, they actually get an anime is, like, well, I mean, sure, maybe you want to go and capture another market. And granted, I did look up on the cast. It is a star-studded cast, if you check out on who's the actors on the VAs. But, like, if you've seen other, like, different shows right now, I mean, sure, there's different other exercise animes out there. I mean, there is a market out there. But to have this thing as a show is, like, I'm not sure if they're going to go for a comedy route or maybe go for an exercise route.
No,
it's definitely interesting.
They confirmed it's comedy. Like, I mentioned that.
So, it's like, okay. I mean, sure, I think they could probably pull it off, given maybe they put in a storyline of some sort. Like, there has been exercise, I mean, that has a comedy feel to it, but, dang, this is definitely an out. Like, I never expected this would have an anime. I never would have expected.
Yeah, like, I knew of this game. I've never played it. I just didn't, whatever reason. And I'm hearing that it's getting an anime.
I mean, apparently some actually do. Maybe, I'm not sure how it did over there in Japan, because, like, I know, like, with the whole fitness games here on Switch. I mean, yes, from Wii Fit to Ring Fit to the only thing was pretty much the only alternative to Ring Fit was actually fitness boxing, if I recall correctly. And there are, like, some other games, maybe, I don't know, third party games that actually try to do the exercise route. So yeah, it's definitely, I think, probably the next best thing aside from Ring Fit. I mean, heck, if it had a Ring Fit anime, that I'll be all over that. But yeah, fitness boxing, sure, why not?
I just don't again, and as the synopsis said, this is going to be about the mundane lives of the, you know, the trainers, because there's a variety of trainers. You can actually, like, I guess, pick one and they help you or whatever. Yes. And, you know, they got a nice I'm looking at art for them. I've never seen this before. I thought that they were like the Wii Fit trainer, you know, who had like that, you know, that kind of thing, but apparently not.
No, it's pretty unique. It's different, diverse characters, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know what to make of this. I mean, the easy way to define this is it's Japan. But why would they do this? It's Japan. Oh, that makes total sense. Exactly.
Yep. Pretty much. There's a market everywhere in Japan for that.
It's Japan. It's always a market. But like, I'm looking at these pictures and it's, yeah. I don't know what to make of this. I just don't. And if it works for them, sure, go for it.
I mean, I'll probably check it out just to see what the heck's up. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. Who knows? But yeah, just gotta wait until this coming fall.
Yeah. Wow. All right. We need to move on. So next up, okay, this one is a story. I don't want to do this story, but we need to talk about it because, once again, you people need help, all right? Because our own Daddy Sakurai did his usual posting of a unique thing from Smash Brothers, and so many people are thinking this is a sign of what's to come. Stop it. Get some help, all right? So the latest pic was him showing Ken from Street Fighter burning alive in lava with his thumbs up sticking out just before it melts away, which is an obvious reference to the Terminator, and was also referenced and used in Doom 2016. So naturally, everyone is thinking, oh, this is confirmation we're getting Doom Guy. No. No, it's not. Stop it. Just stop. Okay.
Yes, some internet research also revealed that he tweeted this on the 30th anniversary of the movie being released in
Japan.
There
you go.
So that is a factor. I will say, I cannot remember any like solid times that this happened, but I feel like it's true. You can write me if you remember. I do think sometimes he teases things in the images, and I'm not going to laugh at anybody who thinks that this could be a Doom Guy reveal. I mean, he has been talked about for forever. And as bad as Todd and I think he would be for this game, he's a major character.
He is.
So potentially this could be a double nod thing, like a Sakurai not really telling you that it's happening, and it is convenient that it's on this 30th anniversary of the movie releasing in Japan, but actually it also is intended to be a hint. So I don't know. I'm gonna say it's not crazy.
Like, we know that Sakurai has done like anniversary picks. Like, he did that one about Kid Icarus that one time, and everyone was like, oh, is this confirmation there's going to be Kid Icarus next? And he had actually make a tweet stating that that wasn't the case, but it was just trying to celebrate the anniversary. So, and as me and Tyler and what we're talking about before the podcast, while Doom Guy could work, it doesn't, his arsenal doesn't work in a Smash Brothers setting. He is a hard rated M character that is defined by the bloodshed of his enemies that he murders quite viciously. Remember, he fights demons on Mars because he can. All right, I mean, in one game, there's others. He went to the underworld and blah blah blah. All right, there's been like 1,000 Doom games, but like his best weapon is the BFG, and any Doom fan knows what BFG stands for. You can't say that in a Nintendo title. All right, so, and yes, we all know that he's best friends with Isabelle, whatever.
The dog.
IRL, you know. But, like, that doesn't mean that they have to be in this game together, alright? They already see each other enough outside of Smash Brothers, okay? They're good, alright? So, go ahead.
Go, no, finish up your thought first.
I was just saying, if you're gonna use that logic, then, like, every character would have their best friend in there. And Sonic doesn't have Knuckles or Tails. Cloud only got Sephiroth and not Tifa or Aerith. Of course, we can't have Aerith because Aerith dies. So, over and over and over. So, like, come on. Stop it.
Just like the whole, I mean, there's always been a fun thing to look at speculations, but again, like these things, like geez, it's almost like saying like okay, are we gonna try to make memes into reality now? I mean, yes, granted, we had Kazuya, we had Sephiroth, and of course Min-Min and Steve, but like
Pyromania.
yeah, like Doom Guy is about like, if that's the fact, let's just bring in Waluigi, like just to make the meme full circle. It's like, come on.
All right. Next up, this one's a curious one. This one came from Gamescom, and it's not an exclusive to the Switch, but it's a game that is coming to it. Marvel's Midnight Suns,
Yep.
a tactical RPG inspired by XCOM, but it will feature Marvel characters, but also XCOM characters in The Hunter or something. I've never heard of this franchise before, but they're saying like it's a return. So I'm like, I don't know what to make of this.
When I saw the trailer on Gamescom, it's like, I mean, again, I'm not the Marvel buff, so I have no idea. But again, it had all these like greats, like the new Ghost Rider, of course, DC, Wolverine, everybody else in there, and apparently like the main character, like I forgot, like basically is your character that they'll be that you get to play alongside like the Marvel universe. Like it seems to be definitely like I mean, as a total newbie, it just seems like, okay, basically you put yourself into the world of Marvel as the sons, as he said. So, I mean, it seems kind of interesting. I mean, definitely good hook, if anything else.
I don't know. I mean, I'm carefully watching the trailer right now, but I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. XCOM is a, a solid franchise. We all know that. And there's rumors about like them teaming up with Marvel on something, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. And like they went heavy with like with the CG
And of course,
on
a lot of music, a lot of licensed music in that
yeah,
trailer, yes.
Enter Sandman forever, man. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. So, I mean, then again, we've seen, surprises before in the XCOM universe, kind of with the, Rabbids. So there's no reason to think that this one couldn't be done correctly. I don't know.
Yep.
I don't
So,
know.
I mean, we don't even see gameplay as well. So, like,
No.
the speculation is definitely up there. Is it gonna use the XCOM tactical RPG formula? Is it gonna be an action base? Like, so there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered. But from what they showed off in the trailers, like, okay, it sets the mood. See what's gonna be the story, if anything else. Sure.
All right, and finally, we'll be talking more about this next week, obviously. But No More Heroes 3. It's finally here ish. It's not here for us as we're recording it, but it's out by the time you're listening to this. So,
Yep.
Will, I will concede the floor to you. What are you most excited for this game?
Like honestly, I'm just kind of interested into the crazy boss fights. So if you haven't like followed on the No More Heroes Twitter handle or any social medias, they basically revealed all these different bosses, like from man, Ching, yeah, one of the bosses named Vanishing Point, Mr. Black Hole, all these different crazy names, which like easily be JoJo stands, if anything else. It's like the crazy boss fights and just the crazy characteristics of like from the interaction with Travis and the antagonist cast is just like, yeah, like this is pure Suda 51, the craziness of it all. Like nothing's gonna make sense. Even if you played the past three games, you're still gonna ask like, what the heck is going on? I mean, heck, you still get to all eat sushi. You go into the middle of the desert. You suplex alligators in your daytime job, which, again, Tyler, I recommend getting this game if you want to go face your fears against alligators.
I
I
don't want to
recommend
face
it.
my fears, though. I do want to get this game. I don't want to face my fears.
Come on, you suplex alligators. I don't want. How's Mud more
They'll
monster than
eat me.
that?
They will eat me. I will mess it up. They'll eat me, and I'll have nightmares, and it'll be bad.
And just like this is just. The game that we have waited for so many years from since No More Heroes 2, and of course we had Traffic Strikes again, but again that was a bridge bridging to this game. So yeah, the creativity of Suda 51, the fight, just the storyline, I'm here for that crazy piece of that crazy man's mind. I'm here for it. That's pretty much why I'm excited for No More Heroes 3. It's just pure, it's, it may not be great in gameplay wise, because I know people have been complaining about the frame rates in the overworld, which Suda has addressed in that. But if you want something that's like fresh, completely like you would never expect anything from like AAA development or even like from other big name titles or first party titles like Nintendo, then I highly suggest like, yeah, playing No More Heroes, if anything else, just if you want something fresh. I mean, if you wanted some, talk about people who are crazy, there's only like two people, like Suda51 and Hideo Kojima. Those are pretty much the two craziest people I know in the video game industry.
Fair. That's fair. Although I would like to say that Kojima is just so open-minded that it's just perceived that he's crazy. And the best example of this is that, unlike a certain person on this podcast, Hideo Kojima loved the Snyder Cut. I'm just saying. So, you know,
that
creator of Metal Gear
discredits everything about his taste. It's a shame.
No, it really doesn't.
That's a real shame. I've lost all respect.
He also did say he doesn't like the Army of the Dead as well. So yeah.
No, he liked Army of the Dead.
He did not. He just said, okay, just watch it. Nothing else. He didn't explain anything else after that text. He's just like, it's mindless.
Yeah,
as a zombie film as it is.
Yeah, we read a different tweet then. Anyway, so again, we'll be talking about that next week after he gets time to play it. So I hope you have a fun gaming experience. So, and now for our main event, we're going to do something truly unique, because we decided that we're going to look at Nintendo characters in context of their histories, where they started out, where they are now, and what growth Nintendo has honestly given them. So let's do some character histories in a Nintendo discussion. And Tyler, you apparently did a lot of research on this because you thought we were going to be doing something else. So,
well, okay, thought is one word. We all thought. We had decided originally that we were going to do a character study on Wario, because of WarioWare coming out in the near future. He's an interesting character. And as I was putting together this outline, I realized none of us probably know like easy amount about Wario, so it would be hard to have a discussion. That said, I did put 2 hours into research, so I do feel like I know a decent amount about Wario.
Take it away.
All right, well, let's jump into Wario's origins. Wario, you probably know, was created in 1992's Super Mario Land 2, The Six Golden Coins. The game
one
was developed by...
One of my favorite Mario games ever. I'm sorry, but like, that's one of my favorite ones ever.
I'm always impressed by the visuals on that game. The leap from Super Mario Land to Super Mario Land 2 is incredible. Like, that game looks really, really good, and it's a Game Boy game.
Mario
Sprite also looks great. But the team that made it, Nintendo R&D1, also developed Metroid and Kid Icarus. And back in the day, and I think it probably is still similar today, honestly, not as big of a deal, Nintendo's first-party developers felt like a real kinship with the characters that they created. A great example is Miyamoto and his like notoriously cold feelings towards Kong Country. Donkey Kong is his character, but he didn't create that game, so there was a different... He just wasn't as into it. And then after Rare left Nintendo, Donkey Kong just went cold for a long time. Nintendo didn't know what to do with that. That was Rare's character, even though it was technically Nintendo's. So Nintendo R&D1 thought, well, we're working with Mario here, but we haven't created Mario. We want to create our own character so they could feel more connected, I suppose, with the universe. And that is why they created Wario. Hijiro Kiyote is the father of Wario. He is the guy who created him along with a character designer. Many people believe that Wario's name is just simply flipping the M from Mario to Wario. However, it actually comes from the Japanese word Warayu, which is bad.
I can pronounce that as Warui. So yeah, it basically is, as you said, it's Japanese word for bad, Warui.
Warui. Interesting. I figured you would be, I kind of butchered that clearly. But yeah, so I thought that was pretty cool. It does not, he actually means bad, which is strange because I don't think Waluigi has the same sort of impact.
Waluigi is definitely a different one. I mean, like, yeah, obviously with Mario and Wario's Waluigi is like, yeah, a bit more extensive with that one. Yeah.
Wario came about at a weird time in Nintendo's canon. The Mario series is 9 or 7 years old. I think Super Mario Bros. Came out in 1985. And back then, the series, it still kind of is magical today, but not as transparently. The original plot of the first Mario is that Bowser and the Koopas cast a magic spell that transformed all the Toads into blocks and coins and stuff like that. And Mario has to defeat them to break the spell. You still see magic in current Mario games. Bowser like can create things sometimes, but when you think of his moves, you think of fire breath and jumping on you. Wario is in that earlier era. He actually originally was a dark mage who cast a hypnotizing spell on the people of the Mushroom Kingdom in Super Mario Land 2 and basically turned them into his servants when Mario was out of the country rescuing Daisy in Super Mario Land 1. The plot of the game is really different than your traditional Mario game because there are no princesses, and it's really about Mario like taking back his country, Mario Land. I didn't know that Mario owned a country, but apparently in this game he does. He has Mario Castle, which Wario took over, and that kind of new story bled its way into what would become the Wario franchise because the character was incredibly popular. The designers felt that it may seem too derivative, but to their surprise, fans and the development team really loved everything about Wario, and they decided, well, this is our character. The sequel, Super Mario Land 3, let's just make it all about Wario. And thus, Wario Land was born. When we think of Wario now, we kind of think of him as this greedy, arrogant, and filthy character, but back in the day, like I had mentioned, the magic gave him a different element, but his popularity was so immediate that Nintendo Power ended up releasing a comic that gives him a much more sympathetic kind of backstory. Wario and Mario were friends growing up. The comic depicts Mario was like just blessed born under a lucky star, and Wario was just the opposite. He was cursed. So Mario would have him go out to the garden and like help him pluck turnips, and Mario would always pull turnips, and Wario would always pull piranha plants that would bite him. Mario would teach him how to flatten coins. Apparently the coins aren't just flat naturally. You flatten them under a thwomp, and Wario would get crushed by the thwomp, like classic Wile E. Coyote stuff. And over the years, Wario built up this resentment towards Mario, and their rivalry. By the time that they're adults, Wario can't let it go. And at the end of the comic strip, Mario calls Wario a wimp and tells him to let bygones be bygones. It was very interesting characterization. But in that comic, you saw the beginning of what the character we kind of know today as. Like nowadays, Wario is always seen doing some sort of like, I want to say like Warner Bros. Looney Tunes style, like blowing himself up with bombs, or like his evil schemes always go completely sideways. And that did kind of start early on in his life. But he's a character who's been interpreted so many different ways over the years. So many teams have worked with Wario. I think one of the most interesting classifications of him is Sakurai in Brawl, because Wario is always, he's evil and selfish, but not like maniacal. And in Brawl,
he's
so evil. Like he's like, he feels like the most evil guy of all. And I would love to know why Sakurai kind of went that way with his character. It was very interesting. But yeah, in his own game, especially in the past, Wario is always kind of just the opposite of Mario, but he's very ambitious in the Wario Land games. In Wario Aware, he's lazy and he like passes off his work to other people, and like he tries to get his friends to create micro games so he can get rich. His character has been interpreted in so many different ways over the years, and in kind of looking up all of his history, it really makes me miss the Wario Land franchise, because it's a permutation of Super Mario, like the Mario world. It's just, it's a darker kind of twist on it. It's like if Mario like got exposed to radiation and like grew a third arm, because the music is a little darker. The enemies are like, there's not Goombas and Koopas. Like they're totally different, like more rough looking and darker. And the platforming is more exploratory than getting to the end. This was like a really great franchise that was really, really successful. And even though after Wario Land, Super Mario Land 3 did sell well, sold over 5 million copies, the sequels did not do quite as well. The series has kind of fallen off. But I really think it's time to bring it back. Wario is actually one of the more creative characters in Nintendo's catalog. And I wouldn't have known that had I not looked this up.
Huh.
Like the way you described it, the entirety of Wario's history, I just got immediately reminded to Death Battle's recount when when they were doing for Wario and DDD.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, because I remember the comic as well. Like, yeah, he was like basically treated as like, yeah, Mario was the jerk to Wario, and like, nope, no, I'm just becoming the resentful Wario that I am, and like, yeah, just try to make it as sympathetic as they could with him, but. As you said, with the many different games, like, in the end, he is universally known as being the selfish, money-greedy, just like, if it's about money, I'll take it, as long as he gives me money. So that's the only, like, main universal trait that we know about Wario.
I do want to note that despite all of Tyler's research, he missed the one thing that was very important. They would always play cowboys, and Wario was always the bad guy. They were a sheriff and rustler. They played it over 1,256 times, and only one time was Wario allowed to be the sheriff, and when he did, Mario made fun of him.
Now, Wario might be an unreliable narrator here, and you can actually find this comic online. Again, this segment was going to be something totally different originally, but I have to shout out the DigiKnow Gaming video on Wario. Dr. Wily on YouTube, The Evolution of Wario, gave me a lot of this research. But you can also find that, just Google Mario and Wario Nintendo Power comic, and it'll come up. I think it's on like Super Luigi Bros. It's really funny, and it really does cue back to like classic cartoons. It totally reminded me of the Looney Tunes, which is just an odd, I don't think of Mario that way, and yet early on in his life he was classified that way in Nintendo Power, like the source for Nintendo.
What a magazine. All right, so anything last things about Wario, Tyler, before we move on?
You should all get WarioWare, get it together when it comes out. It's gonna be great. We need to get the big guy back on his feet. Great character and awesome. Yep, that's it. That's my thoughts.
All right, so I too am gonna take a character that is not a like top tier one per se, not the one that you play as, but rather one that you interact with, and the game is actually named after them. I'm talking about Zelda. Yes, because it's The Legend of Zelda, but you play as Link. I've never really understood that, but okay. So the reason I want to talk about Zelda is that her character progression for a long time was a flat line. And you're like, well, what do you mean by that? Well, originally, all she was a princess that you always had to save, or you had to go and free in some capacity because she was taken by Ganon, or what was his name, the Dark Priest from the original title, and so on and so forth. And even in later games, including Twilight Princess, which I'll come back to, her presence was just there to say, yeah, here's Zelda, she's your goal, go get her. Like, okay. I mean, we've already had one damsel in distress princess with Peach, who honestly I would say has not had any character growth outside of that one solo title she had. Whereas over time, the designers and the story creators of Legend of Zelda decided, you know what, maybe we should actually like let Zelda do more. I know, crazy thought. So the obvious first step for this was clearly Ocarina of Time, where Zelda used the Triforce of Wisdom to become Sheik, one of the best characters ever, and, you know, prove that she was much more than apprentice in distress, and we all appreciate it. And even Zelda Sheik was a Smash Bros. Character that she could transform into before it got separated. And then, of course, there was Wind Waker, which is Tyler's favorite Zelda, where she was Tetra, and then revealed to be the descendant of Zelda, or actually Zelda, depending on how you want to look at it. And everyone noted that when she was Tetra, she was like one of the funnest characters. But then the moment she transformed into Zelda, she like lost all personality. And that kind of sucked. Yeah. So, and then there was Twilight Princess, which I feel personally, despite it being my favorite Zelda game, it's like the worst interpretation of Zelda, because Zelda is literally just there. She's there to surrender her kingdom to Zant. She has a scene where she drops the rapier. And then later on, she gets kidnapped by Zant Ganon. And, you know, Midna's like, oh, you're the Twilight Princess. And then she's gone, you know. And then she comes back to shoot light arrows. Like, that was her shtick for multiple games. Is, hey, I'm the person who's going to shoot the light arrows at Ganon so we can kill him. I'm like, well, I mean, sure, fine. But then, finally, they started to get more consistent in how they portrayed Zelda, and as sad as it might be for Tyler to hear this, that really started in Skyward Sword. Where everyone pretty much agrees that Zelda had so much more personality there. She was actually your friend first, princess second, was someone who, you know, stood up to you against Groose, which I'm just going to say it, Groose sucks. I know that'll get. I knew that would get Tyler angry. I can already.
I actually agree with you. Groose does suck.
Thank you.
I'm going to shock you and say I don't like Groose. And I don't understand why people like Groose.
I don't get it either. It's just like so annoying. Anyway, but like in that one, we actually see Zelda struggle personality wise as she has to try and accept her destiny in regards to being the reincarnation of Hylia, the goddess. And, you know, she wants you to save her, but she also knows she has this destiny about her, and you see her, you know, grow in certain ways. Like, one of my favorite ones is when we find out that the old woman at the temple is actually Impa, and you see Zelda react to that revelation. It's a beautiful thing. And then finally, we have Breath of the Wild and Age of Calamity, where her personality in various ways just skyrockets, because not only does she talk, shout out to Patricia Somerset, but we get to see her vulnerable, like well and truly vulnerable. She doesn't know if she'll be able to unlock her Triforce ability, and she's afraid of letting everyone down. She believes in technology versus her own latent abilities that she's supposed to have. And then when, you know, her father just doesn't believe in her, you know, you can see that it affects her. And then here's Link, you know, just trying to do his job. And she honestly, at certain points, straight up hates him because she doesn't want him around, because he's someone who has it all together when she's kind of falling apart. And this is, you know, shown in certain ways in Breath of the Wild. And then with Age of Calamity, it's just expanded on greatly, because you get to play as her much more, if, you know, if not just, you could play the whole game if you want to. And I like that. I like that they went from this is a princess in distress to no, this is a girl who happens to be a princess, and there's so much more to her. And I'm really hoping that Breath of the Wild 2, whatever it's called, just continues to build upon Zelda, because this is a character that we deserve to know more about. Especially this version, where she is, you know, so capable, so strong, so endurant, and is willing to, you know, admit her own faults, but also overcome them. Because let's be honest here, while Link has had great growth in terms of going from saying nothing to saying three words, you know, that's great character growth, you know, Zelda can top him. This is the one time where a side character can actually top a main character in terms of character growth, and I want to see it, all right? I want to see it, because we're never going to get more about Link, let's be honest here, all right? So why not give more to Zelda? And they've finally been doing that, and I want to see more of it.
It's tricky with a character like Zelda, because she is supposed to be in most games, she's a different person. She's like the reincarnation of a previous person.
Right.
So to have that character growth, and like honestly, I think the most interesting way they could write Zelda through the next 20 years would be to have consistent through lines and explore or how the theme, like really wisdom should be her defining trait. because obviously that's her Triforce, and seeing like how that can bear, how that can impact a person in different ways, I think would be the most interesting storytelling choice that they can make with stars, is having totally different personalities. I do disagree that her characterization really began in Skyward Sword, not to take anything away from Skyward Sword. I think that that's a really good version of her. I do think Wind Waker, Tetra, is phenomenal character. She's super fun. She's very different from the previous iterations of Zelda.
I know, but
and you're not even wrong when you say that when she becomes Zelda, she becomes a little less interesting. That's also true.
Yep.
But it's not like that character, she's not as flat as she is in Ocarina of Time in Wind Waker. There's real development there. And again, it's important to note that, like, that's what I mean when I say the best thing they could do is keep her wisdom and put her in totally different situations, give her totally different personalities. Tetra is nothing like Skyward Sword Zelda. They're completely different. But yet they're the same person, and you can see what makes them like of a pair. I guess I'm trying to remember the expression, but you can see what makes them similar. You can see that through line, and that's why I love Tetra so much. That's why she's my favorite incarnation of Zelda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotta agree. Like when I saw Tetra and like during that time of Wind Waker, like sure, like it's definitely that spunkiness that I think many people kind of drew into Tetra, and like the fact that, oh, she's the incarnation of Zelda. Like, sure, to be expected. But again, it's not really that we're interested in Zelda. It's because we're interested in Tetra. Not just because, like, yeah, she is the next one in line. And, yeah, I agree as well that there is definitely has been a lot of change in character with regard to Zelda, especially since Skyward Sword. Like, sure, you can argue that, yeah, it began with Tetra, began with Skyward Swords. It's, like, the debate's there. But we're going to, including like we're as to talking about the future with Breath of the Wild 2 and like how she's going to be interpreted there, or if Age of Calamity is any hint. Like, if Nintendo does anything, like has any plan with the character of Zelda itself, and especially like that dreading moment of Breath of the Wild 2, like aside from like being cast off that cliff and all that, being separated from Link, like it may give opportunity of like, to see if Zelda can really be changed from that hesitant character from the first Breath of the Wild into like perhaps an even more stronger version of her in Breath of the Wild 2. So there is definitely opportunity there, to say the least.
I just say, like, it's always been like one of the most ironic jokes in gaming that the game is called Legend of Zelda, but you play as Link. And then with some of the more recent games, we finally get to see that, you know, this is her legend in certain ways, and I want that to keep going because Zelda can be special when you write her the right way. So, all right, Will, take it away. you got an interesting one.
Yeah, like I was basically like I was really wondering which kind of character actually had the greatest kind of change throughout the many years. I mean, sure, there's Mario, but again, that'd be way too easy. So I'm going to decide to talk about the whole greatest shadow of Mario himself. Yes, I am talking about the brother of Mario, Luigi Mario. So, yeah, like, personally, the reason I chose this one is because, like, if you are, like, either one of two siblings, like, you're the younger brother, you're always like, why am I being put up to the standard of my older brother? Like, oh, the king of second banana, like, as Colonel says in Snake's Codec, like, even back when he was like first created the original games, like he was just a simply palette swap. Like, who is Luigi Mario? Like, okay, it's just a green Mario. That's just about it. But slowly, he tried to have his own identity. Like, be it the show or as the games continues to follow. Like, sure, he was like the longer, skinnier version of Mario. But what was there really to talk about him? He was just basically another Mario character. Like, he's, of course, they would basically try to, we're going to separate his character into like, oh, he can jump high, he can go walk a bit flat faster, or he's that. But at the same time, he just was definitely had that struggle, because as we know with Luigi's Mansion, he was always viewed as a coward. Like, he was not the that whole bravado, that well-rounded guy that you know as Mario Mario. He was always that, unfortunately, be seen as that weaker character, that weaker sibling, like, Mario, Mario, always, like, calling out for his brother's name when it's time of need. Like, he really couldn't, like, as we always make fun of him, he couldn't get out of his brother's shadow, which is kind of, like, really sad for anybody who in a sibling relationship. But as, like, the years goes on, and heck, up to current day, we seen, in a way, he has grown in a sense. Like, even, like, take, for example, with A Thousand Year Door, he actually has his own adventures with, like, his own separate companions while aiding Mario. So, like, that maybe is some growth there. And as well, let's not forget about his recent outings with Luigi's Mansion 3. Like, sure, he's still the same cowardly man that we know. He's still the same scaredy cat. But time and time again, he faces off against King Boo and actually saves Mario time to time. So, be it begrudgingly, he still is, like, has that same weakness that has plagued him all these years. But at the same time, he still tries to manage and powers on through regardless of his fears. So that's got to mean something, at least for his character growth. And of course, naturally, we just had this, like, whole year of Luigi. He had his own game. He, like, was basically the poster boy for Luigi's Deluxe, which kind of odd move from Nintendo's part. But in a sense, he just, like, kind of gained more of an identity, if anything else. Like, yes, he is still the same brother of Mario, but at the same time, he just kind of had that more, I guess, acknowledgement of, like, he is there, not just simply as his brother, but actually as someone else. Because, again, we all remember that whole meme of the Luigi death stare in Mario Kart 8. Like, okay, all that pent-up rage is finally coming out. And everything else, like, to the games, like, even for, like, Mario Strikers Charge, he had attitude, if anything else. So overall, like, the character Luigi, he is definitely an interesting character, say at least in my opinion. Like, as he is, some would call him just the brother of Mario. He doesn't share the spotlight, but again, slowly as the years goes on, who knows, maybe the next Luigi's Mansion game or Luigi game in general, we'll probably see more of, like, how he could probably bust out of his own shell, his own comfort zone, to actually be someone unique aside from being the brother of Mario. So I'm not sure if that's, like, the proper history lesson, like what Tyler did with Wario, but in the end, I feel like Luigi is definitely that character that, even though he is, like the brother of an icon, he still is able to, like, stand out of himself, in my opinion.
One of the best Luigi games is Mario & Luigi Dream Team, where you get to explore Luigi's subconscious as Mario, and it's just this, like, goofy and cartoonish dreamscape, and you can see what goes on in his crazy mind. But I loved that game because of how much it empowered Luigi. The giant Luigi fights, where he grows to, like, massive size and takes on bosses, were one of my favorite sequences in any Mario PG, and I feel like that's a really underrated title. And I encourage everybody who likes Luigi, if you're a Luigi fan and you haven't played that game, you should definitely play it, because it you know, no Mario game is writing an Oscar winning screenplay.
Of course.
Hello,
but this one's a good one. I still point still stands. Thousand Year Door is, like, a good, it's a good story, but it's not that great. I mean, it's a little overrated. It's still good. I love it, but it's not, like, the plot is, like, super complex you can find meaning in anything, but it's not like it goes beyond your standard a children's story. Maybe it's a little bit darker, but it's not that much darker. The themes are all standard.
Oh boy.
You have no rebuttal. There's no rebuttal.
Oh, I have a rebuttal.
Right.
But that we're focusing on Luigi, so I will bite my benevolent tongue before I go.
Sure. But anyway, you should definitely play Mario & Luigi Dream Team if you love Luigi. I think it's the best he's characterized. He's great in Luigi's Mansion 2, obviously, but Dream Team, being an RPG, lets you explore him a little bit more.
Luigi's always going to be such an interesting character because he's the original clone. Like, he's the original gaming clone, long before Smash Brothers ever did it. And, or another game, of course. But, you know, they have done their best to make him special. You know, like, his first one, if I recall correctly, his first solo game was actually Mario Is Missing.
Right.
And then, of course, he got, you know, the Luigi's Mansion titles. He got, he was, you know, a co-star in the Mario and Luigi games. And all those were all interesting. I think one that's also underappreciated is his villainous role in Super Paper Mario.
Right.
Mighty L, I believe he was.
Yes.
But
in Mr. L, but close
Mr.
enough.
L, thank you. It's been a while since I played that one.
Yeah.
But I think we also need to acknowledge here that Nintendo has never been afraid. No, I didn't get to say that. They've never wasted an opportunity to just make fun of Luigi at every single turn. Think about his final Smash, all right? The negative zone, where he's like doing that weird interpretive dance and everything around him goes crazy. There's even a belief that that field is drawn from his own negative emotions about how he's into the shadow of Mario, which is incredibly deep and oddly disturbing. All right, so yeah, there's that. And then we can't forget I don't want to say the most abusive thing that's ever happened to Luigi, because he's gone through a lot, but this has to be the most over-the-top thing that happened to Luigi, the Simon Belmont Smash Brothers reveal trailer.
Yep.
Where he literally dies, and he gets turned into a ghost. And right before he goes back to his body, his soul is, like, harvested by that one creature, it's implied, or whatever. And I'm like, you can't do that to any character but Luigi, because everyone will understand that Luigi's the punchline of the joke. Because, of course, you're going to do it to Luigi. And if you don't believe me, think about the Sephiroth trailer, all right? Because they did that whole impaling silhouette of him going, of Sephiroth impaling Mario. Oh, no, not really. He just stuck his sword on his suspenders. But if it was Luigi, yeah, they would have, like, dusted him off and called it a sacrifice to Sephiroth. So, like,
who could forget when Ridley impaled Mario?
That is true. That is true. They did impale him and Mega Man.
Yeah, actually, I grabbed Mario by the head and impaled Mega Man, if I recall correctly.
But either way, it's just like they are never going to waste an opportunity to make fun of Luigi. And I think that's why they did the Summer of Luigi or the Year of Luigi, because they felt bad. They felt bad that for after, what was it, 25, 30 years, they're like, you know what, we should probably just, let's just give him his due. All right. And I'm glad with that, because, you know, Luigi's Mansion 3 was a great game. It's one of my favorites on Switch. Glad I beat it happily. So, and Luigi has gotten at least some things to differentiate him from Mario, especially in Smash Brothers now. But they could still do more. they could still do more. So, all right. So, wrapping up, I want to do a rapid fire question. What main, like the character you play? What mainline Nintendo character do you think has gotten the most character growth over their lifespan?
Oh, that's a good question.
Main character.
Like, main character who has such a, like, major change throughout the years. I mean, honestly, the first thing that pops into my mind is obviously Link, because, like, we had the different timelines, we had the different interpretations of Link, like, if you want to talk about
Link?
It, like,
I mean,
there's different incarnations. Maybe
he's
just
the same character, though. Yeah, he's the same character.
And he doesn't have growth because he doesn't talk and he doesn't emote or even connect with things. You get his growth because of his connections with other characters, like with Zelda. So, I'll counter that by saying Samus Aran, because even though she doesn't talk, Every one is a struggle. Okay, she doesn't talk in most of them. Every one of her games is a struggle for survival, and you see that she is a fighter every single time. And then, like, some of the ones like Fusion, where you do get her talking, and unfortunately Metroid Other M, you know, you do get to see more of her personality. And then by the time we get to Dread, based on what we're seeing in the trailers, she's going to have some serious character moments there. So, like, that's one that pops to mind.
Samus is an interesting one. I'm not super familiar with Metroid series. She does strike me as fairly static, and when she's not, people don't like it. Like in Metroid Other M, her characterization there, I would agree that there was growth, but it was frowned upon. The franchise characters are tricky because it's like an episode of your favorite cartoon, right? The characters go through an episode and they learn a lesson, and then by the time the next episode begins, it's a clean slate. Like they're the same character that they were at the beginning of the previous episode for, you know, not serial or for, I forget which serialized or not serialized, but cartoons that tell a fresh story every time and don't link together. So I don't know if there really is one long standing Tendo character. Like I was thinking like Fox, but Fox doesn't really do it either. He kind of resets at the end of every game. The villains are kind of the same way. I don't know. The character I think who has the best character growth is Dimitri from Fire Emblem Three Houses.
There
but
you go.
That's not a recurring character, which kind of
and you could say that for most Fire Emblem lords, that they have to go through a certain struggle, like with Ike or with Crom or Robin, you know, so or Edelgard or the. It is a hard one because Mario, if I really want to talk about Mario growth, I'm only going to talk about Odyssey, where right at the end, he actually kind of goes and proposes to Peach and she rebukes him. Like, that's it. Like, that's the only thing I can think of when it comes to Mario growth, is that after all these games, he finally realizes, yeah, you know what, maybe I should get with Peach. And then she goes, yeah, no.
Yeah, that was just, I'm still upset about it, to be honest.
I am too, man. I am too.
Honestly, maybe Wario. He does change depending, like I said in my history lesson, he does change from game to game. He always has the greed thing, but the way his character does press forward a little bit. Like in WarioWare to Wario Land, he is totally different. And I think that that's more of a result of just different development teams and different interpretations of the character. But he would be up there, I would think. It's tough. I just pulled up the Smash roster to look at everybody else. And I mean, does anybody think Yoshi? not really.
Not per se of Yoshi, no.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough. I do wish Nintendo would go, and I see why they don't. It might not be the best business decision. You know, let's say you just take Mario and you put him on a game where he, like, the next game, like, something, like, tough happens, and Mario has to, like, get over a tragic, you know, event in a previous game. Like, people wouldn't like that. So, and you could say the same for every single character. Yeah. Link is the one that you could do something with. So I think that might have been why he jumped to Will's mind right away, because he does have the most potential to evolve. Like from Breath of the Wild 1 to 2, you could definitely change him a little bit, but having him not talk does kind of make that difficult.
So if anything, that kind of shows the strength of the franchise, is that they don't need to have those deep character arcs most times for these characters, because you're still gonna have fun regardless. I mean, even with ones like Star Fox, where you have the characters talking constantly, going through stories, you don't really think about that. You're thinking about the space battles and, you know, blowing up enemy tanks and all of that. So you don't really need Fox to be going on uber deep adventures. And then when they did, like with Star Fox Adventures, no one really liked it.
Yeah,
I thought it was fine, but yeah, no one really liked it.
I do think Fox would be my answer, though. Yeah. I'm going back to that. I think he does change from 64 to Assault to Command.
Yeah, Command especially, they show like a lot of growth there. Better and worse. Okay, we do need to acknowledge, though, that Fox and his crew are the most hardcore of the Nintendo characters, because they were willing to amputate their legs just to be able to handle their R-Wings better. It's canon. All right, because if you have enough G-forces as you fly, your blood goes from your head to your feet. So to prevent that, all of Team Star Fox has mechanical legs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's canon. They did. That's canon.
I don't know if they still do, but originally they did.
So, like, yeah, that's
I got the real answer, by the way. It just struck me. Blue from Pokemon. Blue from Pokemon goes from this brat, like, punk rival to this really mature, like, friendly, respectable dude. That's my answer. And he appears in multiple games, and he's been around a long time. I'm going with Blue.
That's an
well, again, he was that brat. I'll say it later, loser. And, like, Natsu becomes actually respectful, even in Pokemon Master EX as well. It's like, okay. Yeah, I can definitely see that. I can see that.
There you go. All right, and with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, hold on.
Tyler, who was supposed to put the poll question last Thursday night. When did you actually put the poll questions, Tyler?
Well, my phone had an issue posting the poll question, and I posted it 3 days ago, which is plenty of time.
Uh-huh.
It's plenty of time to vote.
Plenty of time.
Now, not many people did vote. Is that because I didn't post it on time?
Yes.
Possibly.
Yes, it was.
Possibly. I'm not willing to say for sure. But we asked you two questions, actually. The first list of games we asked you if you were most excited for was WarioWare, Get It Together. 17% of you said that. Super Mario Party or Mario Party Superstars, 50% said that. Shin Megami Tensei 5 received 17% of the vote. And Pokemon Legends Arceus received 17% also.
Wow, so Superstars won? That clearly shows that not many people voted.
The other one, every single person voted for Metroid Dread. No More Heroes, 0%, Pokemon, 0%, Advance Wars, 0%, 5 votes, not a big voting pool, but everybody voted for Metroid Dread.
Boom.
Yeah.
So, I win. So, alright. Okay, we'll do a really simple poll question this week. Are you going to get No More Heroes 3? Yes, no, I'll get it later.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler will post that tonight, won't you, Tyler?
Well, I'm going to say yes.
Oh, God. Such commitment, Tyler. Such commitment.
If you don't put that poll, I will send an alligator gift later down the line.
There you go. Fear the alligator. He'll send Croaky after you, and he'll eat your hand. So
terrible.
I know, right? What did you expect? Alright, and of course, let us know about everything else we've talked about today. Are you excited for WarioWare and Dread based on the new trailers that came out? Are you going to check out Pokemon TV on Switch? Are you going to get the Animal Crossing Puma shoes? Are you going to watch that fitness boxing anime should it come to the West? Please say no. And what do you think of the Smash Brothers rumor? And we'll see you next time. But minus Tyler, because he'll be traveling. So we'll try and get a guest host, and if not, it'll just be me and Will. So,
hey, beautiful, everyone.
Yeah. So, for Atelier's Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag!